Hello and welcome to the Modern Romantic Podcast, where we celebrate and inspire romanticism through passionate people doing incredible things. Hi, my humor is 67% dark chocolate, 17% milk chocolate, and just a little bit of cinnamon on top. Hi, I'm Trey. And I am joined by the host of today's show, Emily. Hi, Emily.
Hi. I'm ready for you this time.
Yes.
I'm ready for you this time.
All right.
I'm gonna clear my throat here. I lost it. Hold on a second. There we go. I'm ready. Picture, if you will.
Okay.
A spicy tango. Ooh. Amidst the velvety embrace of the darkest forest. Ooh. Where shadows and secrets entwine in a dance of intrigue. Within this enigmatic realm, I emerge as your guide, a purveyor of wit wrapped in obsidian allure, like the finest chocolate. My humor is a symphony of bittersweet complexity, teasing the senses with its smooth, creamy cleverness. Layer upon layer of tantalizing jests unfold, each one a playful unraveling of mysteries, each quip an intoxicating blend of mischief and mirth. Thank you.
Wow.
Well, hot damn. Like, okay.
I'm giving blushing.
Out. And that's our show.
Thank you for coming, everyone.
Good night, everybody. Okay, I have been outdone not for this episode, but for the entire year. So I bow to the queen.
I'm usually not ready for this. I'm so sorry. But today I am.
And we're so glad for it. You know, honestly, I feel like that description would describe the sensation that I had while tasting some of the delectable goods made by today's guest. So will you do me the favor of introducing today's guest?
I would. I'm also ready for that. Sorry, I'm a little. Ladies and gentlemen. We're trying to be formal. Please join me in welcoming our amazing guest tonight, Constantine Zigo. He's a former CEO turned chocolatier, and his journey into the world of chocolate making is as fascinating as it is crazy delicious. So welcome to the podcast, Constantine.
Ah, thank you very much. Am I supposed to say something flowery too? Like,
no.
Okay, good. Because I can rip that through ChatGPT really quick if I need to, but I'm not sure I can off the cuff that.
No, I think, no, you're good because your chocolate speaks for you and it is incredible. So you've done your job.
Yeah, this is the good idea. You butter up your hosts by, you know, sending a little chocolate in advance of the podcast interview, I think, right?
That was
It's a way to do it.
Brilliant. And well
done. A little bit of an icebreaker.
Well done. Sorry, I was reading the comments.
Let's see.
I should have added like all of that, and then but then topped with a cute little sprinkle of Hoggleslog.
Oh, that would have been good.
Man, I missed that opportunity. I'll have to catch that some other time. I'll bring up Hoggleslog some other time.
Okay, well, clearly, this is the chocolate podcast. This is the chocolate episode. This is what it's going to go down as. This is the chocolate. Look at what it's already doing to everybody now. We haven't even gotten started yet.
Oh.
It's already having its effect.
We're flustered minimally.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so for our audience at home, please understand that Emily and I have been diligently, we have been so good, except for, okay, well, mostly good. We had one single square of the chocolate because we are waiting to do a taste testing later in the episode. I have a mug full of chocolate pieces and I am hungrily looking at it right now. But when I tell you that singular square of chocolate is so good, I'm not even kidding. Like, we couldn't wait until we got on the podcast to say how good it was. It's incredible. So Constantine, all of that very verbose thing to say, just to ask you, how much, who do we have to thank for getting you into chocolate? Because that is incredible.
That would be my then 10-year-old son, William. So here's a story. So his name is William. He's 10 years old. And he comes to me like every young kid does about this age. You know, he's looking for a little bit of money. And he says, I think I should start a lemonade stand. What do you think of that? And I said, that is absolutely stupid. We can't do that. I mean, that's been done. Come on, let's try and up the ante. Let's try to do something else. What if we made, chocolate together? And, he's 10. What's he going to say? So he's like, sure, that sounds great. And I had never really made chocolates before. And obviously he hadn't either. So we just started. So we got, some candy melt chocolate, and he was dipping strawberries and Oreos and walking around the neighborhood, selling chocolate bars, and made little chocolate pizzas, really kind of cool, put nuts and stuff on them and everything. Yeah, totally fun. And, at some point he became a teenager and decided he didn't want to do it anymore. But I was having a blast. I was still doing it, I was doing fancier things while he was dipping strawberries and Oreos and things. And one thing led to the other. I was a corporate CEO, like you said, small company, 50, 60 employees at the time that I left. And it was kind of a hobby then for me too. I would make chocolates for the staff. And since they all worked for me, they had to eat it, and like it. So, which they did. And, it was a hobby. And then after I left the corporate world, I got bored for a couple of years, and someone said, hey, I see this building for sale. It's like an ice cream coffee shop. Maybe it's something you should look into. And because I've been looking for a place to make chocolates for fun. I was maybe biting off a little more than I could chew. Cause I didn't know anything about ice cream or coffee or anything. But then my wife said the magic thing that you never... She said the magic thing. She said, but you could make it the kind of place you would want to go to.
Oh,
it was amazing. So anyway, 6-7 years later, we still have the place. It's a beautiful place on the lake. It's called the Park Lake Creamery. Upstairs is the chocolate factory. It's where I make all the chocolates. Downstairs is where the coffee and the ice cream and all that kind of stuff happens. And that's how it all began. So it's been about, 12-ish years, I guess. I have to think about it, but around 12 years of making chocolate. That's how it all started.
That is awesome. And congrats, that's the wrong word. I didn't mean to say that, but thank you to your wife too, for saying that, and your reaction says it all. I think that's incredibly supportive and awesome of her. And that was like the right thing to say.
I guess it was. It was the right thing to say at that time. So yeah, we went all in. And it's one of those husband and wife businesses.
Yeah.
We're both there. Yep. It's something really we built together. And, we go in there all the time, and we spend a lot of time together in there.
So I do have to ask, because you're working with chocolate so much, what do you do for things like Valentine's Day, or for some of those more like romantic things? Do you still give chocolates, or what do those gifts look like?
That's a great question, because you almost feel like you're cheating if you give someone chocolates for the chocolate holidays. And a lot of my gifts are just kind of that whatever's laying around on the tray the next day. So it doesn't have to necessarily be Valentine's or whatever, there's usually leave little treats on the tray, and, find, somebody will find them, and devour them. But, I give a lot of chocolates out to, to neighbors or to friends or to the police department or, to people who don't have as much, there's some of that happens too. So a lot of chocolate gets given away, and obviously a lot of chocolate gets, you know, gets purchased too.
That's awesome. I believe Valentine's Day is really technically every day, so.
Yeah, there you go.
I see that you're
living. Every day is Valentine's Day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're living that already. Sorry, my cat is being awesome down here. She's back to the podcast, everyone. We got like, what, a 3-week break? She decided to leave me alone. She knows when Monday night is.
So, Constantine, whenever you're making chocolate and you're thinking back to about 12 years ago when you first started out compared to now, how would you say that your technique has evolved, or how has your chocolate evolved, be it taste, what kind of beans you source or locations you source your beans from? Like, can you talk us through what things have changed?
Sure. I did. So chocolate making, for those of you who really, I don't make chocolate from bean often. Perfect. I can though. I have purchased nibs before. I do have a grinder. I can add sugar. The only time I really made the only chocolate I really make from scratch, I should say, is my sugar-free diabetic chocolate, because it's incredibly complicated. Because I can't really buy what I want, so I have to make it. And because I've been working for years to try to perfect a chocolate for people that are pre-diabetic or diabetic, and that just, you know, can't have sugar. One of the things that you realize quickly when you have a chocolate business like I do is how many people actually cannot partake. And because there's sugar in the chocolate, obviously, and, or they can't have dairy, or they can't have nuts, or they can't have soy, or they can't have something. So, it's not really part of the business per se, but, a lot of people come to me with their allergies or specific issues that they've got, and that has prevented them from having chocolates because they can't have refined sugar, or they can't have, you know, something that's in there. And so then you kind of jump into science mode, right? To try to science your way out of that problem, to try to make them something that they can truly enjoy. And, you know, so Trey, you're asking like, how has my technique changed or whatever, you know, part of it is just the confidence to be able to attack the food science part of this thing. You know, in the beginning, you're just happy when everything actually works, because chocolate production is incredibly scientific. There's a lot of sensitivities to moisture, to heat. You know, I just have lots of stories about that where things have gone wrong. And, when you've done it for many, many years, you're quicker to catch a potential problem, and you have more tools in your toolbox to fix them. I would say that's one of the things that's happened. I am considered a master chocolatier now. I did go to Belgium and study. The way you do this, the way it works in this business is it's not like you go to a school or anything. You can go to a pastry school and become a chocolatier, but to become a master, you have to be willing. It's difficult because there's nothing that you can get that just makes you a master. You just have to be confident enough to say that you're a master in a room full of other people, if you know what I mean. So, you know, if you say you're a master painter and everyone looks and kind of snickers and smirks, then, you know, you feel funny, right? So if like to call yourself a master, you better be able to say it. So that's kind of how it is. But I did go to Belgium and study under one. And I also went to Canada to study under one, just 1 week shots. That's kind of how it worked, kind of the old apprenticeship program type thing. And that gave me a lot of confidence too. So chocolate making is a little bit old school in that it's still kind of apprenticeship based. It's still kind of, you know, school based and stuff.
Yeah. Fascinating.
I got better, Trey. I got a lot better. I did. Like in the beginning, you know, I was working, I was just happy to make stuff like to succeed. And later, you know, I started refining my techniques. And because I'm a science guy, I'm a computer science guy also, on top of everything else, because my past life, I'm very like methodical, which is the exact opposite of my TikTok persona. Mm-hmm. So my TikTok persona is I throw some shit in a pot and it's just going to work out. Right. But I'm doing that on purpose because I want people to get over the fear. Yeah. But when I'm in my shop, I've got detailed notes, like what happened last time, what I probably should do different, you know, anything that was imperfect or anything that I would like to maybe try next time, all detailed out. And that helps a lot in terms of the scientific mind is a great asset when you're trying to be artistic with chocolate.
Please somebody clip that. I think that is a wonderful statement. We will come back to that. I love that your approach to it is how can I look at this to improve it? I love the methodicalness, if that's a word. We're going to make it one for tonight's podcast. But I love the methodology that you're taking with that. People say that art is often devoid of any kind of scientific thought behind it. But when I think towards these incredibly angular sorts of structures or the way that certain, I'm thinking more along the lines of painting, but in any form of art, there is still a little bit of science. Music is nothing but a series of wavelengths that we just perceive together in a very like compressed format. So even like with something like chocolate, it definitely makes sense for me that this is still a science and there is still a process to improve until you get it just right. So that 100% makes sense to me. And it makes sense to Velvet too.
Yeah, you can hear.
Yes.
It's like she just said, it's edible chemistry.
It does respond well to, it does, in the beginning, I think when you're first starting, it does seem kind of magical. But that's because you don't know what you're seeing. You don't understand. You've got too many variables, so you don't know how to pin one down. And so you're saying, well, I don't understand why this happened, or you'll say things like, oh, that's just how it is. That's just how it works. But mm-hmm. as you get deeper into it, everything has a reason. So if something did become grainy or something, if you made a marshmallow and it became sugary, if you made caramel and there was oil that rose to the top of the surface, or if you made chocolate and you have a white, only the center bars have like a white top on them. Like what mm-hmm. happened? Mm-hmm. Right. And you look and someone who hasn't done it for a long time, they'll look at it and wonder and say, well, I don't know why that happened, you know, but someone who's like really studying it, they're like, yeah, that's latent heat. Those bars in the middle had more latent heat from those, and the ones on the side had less, you know, and you can see it. I think next time maybe I need to spread those bars out, you know, stuff like that. I'll give you one. Here's a story for you. Okay. I'm starting out. I'm renting a kitchen in the lovely St. Catherine's Church because you could rent a kitchen at St. Catherine's for no money. Because whoa. They liked William the 10-year-old.
Aww.
Okay.
Aww.
They liked William the 10-year-old. And so they're like, come and use the kitchen whenever you want. Love that. And so I was in there and I had hand dipped, four trays of caramels. So let's just say roughly 400, I would say, by hand with a fork. Okay. Laid them out. I've got them all laid out on the table in their little kitchen, and in slow motion, a wave, and I mean slow, like over the course of 3 or 4 minutes, a wave passed over those chocolates and they all turned white. And I was like, you couldn't stop it. It was like, it just went when, so they were all done. They were beautiful. They were glossy. They were finished. And then I watched in horror as 200 of these things just turned white and became unusable.
Oh.
It took me forever to figure that out. There was a pilot light inside the gas stove that was creating a cone of heat just a little bit too hot in a semicircle around my work area. And that's what happened.
Wow.
I know, right? So this is like the kind of thing where you don't see it at first, and then later you see it. So science is just critical. Everything that's going on in there is scientific. And once you get a grasp on the science of what's happening and you like master the intellectual part of it, then your creativity can really start to roll, because now you can do stuff. Now you can make the prettier colors. Now, you know, you can experiment more and push things more to the edges, to the limits, you know, because you know what to do. The people that do chocolate sculpting and art pieces, show pieces, I don't really do that. But the ones that do, they're really pushing the chocolate to the limit. You know, they'll put the chocolate in a food processor to create almost like a paste, and they'll smash that paste and create, you know, rocks and stones and pebbles. And then they'll hit that with a little bit of green and they'll produce moss, you know, and they're actually artistically producing something with that chocolate. Any one technical error and that thing's not going to work. Mm. So the entire time that they're artistically producing this thing that's so beautiful, the science is there working to make sure they don't make any mistakes, because you don't want your leaf to turn white by accident.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I do, one of my art forms is glass fusion. And a lot of what you're saying resonates, because we do very similar things with glass fusion. It's obviously a different art form, and we're using a kiln instead of maybe an oven, but yeah, it's like that. What you can do with glass is kind of amazing, but until you have those basic scientific principles with how hot you need to hold it and how long and how slowly you cool it down, things like that all affect your end product. So I can relate on that level.
So. You can't necessarily make what you want to make because you've got a technical limitation. Like the thing, maybe, I don't know, glass, I don't know, maybe the thing breaks, you know, didn't want it to break, you know?
Oh, that's so, happened.
Yeah, I'm sure. So it kind of gets in the way of it. It kind of gets in the way. You got some kind of vision or whatever, but that gets in the way of it. So, but I love that. Mm-hmm. I love that. I'm one of those people that kind of needs to get creative license. Like I don't create for the sense of creating, like probably a lot of your listeners do, which is awesome that they can do that. But for me, I kind of need to have a purpose. So the fact that I'm making this chocolate for my business allows me to be creative, and that's just the way I am. But I love it. And I love, you know, being able to be creative with it, for sure.
Go ahead, Trey.
When it comes to the creativity, you mentioned earlier, I'm sorry, scratch that. You mentioned earlier how that one story of how all of that turned white on the top. So say that you have several batches of them that go unusable, or you have a couple setbacks. How do you overcome something like that? What do you do to set yourself back up mentally to go back in and be more successful the next time?
Good question.
Well, first of all, I try not to throw it in the trash. I do sometimes have to. I do sometimes straight up have to throw it in the trash. And there is something psychological about that, because once you've, and my wife will be yelling, like, no, you know, I'll tell her I just had to throw it away. And, you know, she'll be on the phone or whatever, like, no, you know, but you know, there's something, I don't know. There's something, I don't know how to say this exactly, but there's something somewhat cleansing about throwing it away because you're like, I really failed. Okay. I have to, it's gone now. So I'm going to try again, you know, and you always try again, but you have to like analyze, you know, what in the world did you do wrong? Mm-hmm. And you have to try to like figure out what it is. Oftentimes my bloopers, my ends and pieces, my screw ups, et cetera, they get packaged to, you know, to donations or something like that. Or sometimes we'll sell ends and pieces and bloopers and things like that as well. But, it happens more than you might think, Trey. As you know, I should be better than that by now, but I'll still make a mistake. I'll still ruin product. And it does hurt my feelings. But you have to, as I'm always telling other people, you know, you can't sell inferior product because it's got your name attached to it. Mm-hmm. So you have to find it in yourself to throw it away. I'm repeating myself, but there's something, like I said, cleansing. Maybe the cleansing is the wrong word. What is it? It's so final. It's so like, yes, I've decided that I can't sell this because it's not as good as it needs to be. It is now gone. And therefore I have to try again because I now don't have it. So now I have to try again. So it's not like, oh, maybe I can save these. Maybe no one will notice. You know what I mean? You just have to be willing to tell yourself you failed and then try again. And once you've decided that, which is really, really final when it goes in the trash can, when you literally dump it, okay? There's like psychological, it's like, oh my God. Do you know there's times I've actually looked at it and I've actually dug in there and like I had another piece. Like, is it that bad? I mean, you know, it's not what's going in the trash. Like, you know, was that too fast? Did I overreact? You know, but yeah, I guess, you know, just the art of throwing it away and I'm sure that this happens in other art forms too. And the other people who aren't in the art, they must just stand there in horror. Like if you were to do some kind of a painting and you're like three quarters done and then you screwed up the tree and you're like, screw it. Bam. You take your knife and you go, yeah, like, you know, yeah. Oh, no! The people are looking at that saying, no, it's fine. The tree's okay. You know, that's how they are with me. They're like, no, that's okay. So it's a little red. It dripped, you know, but I know that it's not right. And you got to throw it away. And so like, what is that?
Relatable. What is that? It's relatable is what it is. It says that you have an excellence and a standard. And I think that's awesome. I think that I won't say perfectionism because I believe there are people that struggle with that, and that is a whole different thing. But excellence is something you clearly strive for, and it matters to you. And I love that. I think that's awesome. But I can relate to that for sure, because I've gotten rid of glass and photographs, and because I've done a bunch of. I was gonna say I've done some sewing.
Just a little sewing, just a little here and there.
Stitch a thing or two. And I've gotten rid of whole garments because I've been like, yeah, no, I made it. It's
and it's like, how did you get rid of it? Like, if you had the glass thing, do you just go like that? And you're like, wow, I just broke that, you know? Or that, like, in my case, the chocolate went into the trash. You know,
it's not even edible at this point. Yeah, it's like
exactly. Yeah. It's like, okay, that's it. In that moment, I made that decision, and now it's. Now it's time to go on. But you can't cry about it. You can feel sad, but you need to like, okay, all right, I know I can do better. I know I can do better. You know, let's break it down. There's at least three or four things wrong here. This is probably the reason why this was wrong. I need to go back and work through the steps. When you produce chocolates, I imagine it's like this in other forms too. But it's a tremendous number of back-to-back sequential steps. hundreds sometimes if you want to get that granular, okay? Mm-hmm. If you mess up a step, it's you might recover, you might not. There, it depends on how bad that mistake was, but it is a series of steps. So if you do get to the end or sometimes the middle, you know, it's not necessarily the end. Like you know you messed up two-thirds way in or one-third of the way in, you know, whatever. You didn't mm-hmm. have to necessarily finish it and then realize it was bad. You could realize it somewhere along the path. Mm-hmm. But you still, like, you know, you're like, okay, you do have to retrace all of those steps. And so there's a part of you that's, this is like, you know, the angel and the devil, you know, and like, you should fix that. Screw it. They'll never see it. You know, yes. You got to have this like, and then you got to come in and make the decision. You got
to
roll.
It happened to me yesterday, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. I had a piece of glass. I'm layering two layers of glass together to fuse them together. And I'm cutting circles, which are difficult. Well, relatively. Circles are not as easy, especially certain glasses don't cut as easy as others. So I cut a circle, and when I went to actually, I won't get into the details, but basically it broke. And it broke in such a place that, because glass fusion, you can just melt it back together. Mm-hmm. So, but sometimes, and most of the time, you will see a tiny little line where it was. And so what do you just, okay, maybe I can use a little scraps for something else later, or do I start with a fresh piece of glass? What do? I don't know. And you sit there with the angel and the devil doing the same thing where you're like, no one will see it if you do it right. And no, you should start over because excellence.
I love that, because now I know it is the same. It's the line. Mm-hmm. And you see the line, you know the line's there.
Mm-hmm. And I might be able to hide it with other decor, like things I do to it or the way I shape it later, whatever. But mm-hmm. I know it's there. Someone else could see it. And you're right. Like, it's got my name on it. I want to be able to charge a certain price for it. I have a standard. So, yeah, I get that. And the nice thing about glass fusion, though, is I don't throw many pieces away, because I can always refuse glass or use scraps, or worst case scenario, I can grind that down into powder and make new glass with it.
Ooh.
Yeah, glass fusion doesn't have to have any waste unless you want to. You can always like repurpose it, basically. So I could see, though, why you can't necessarily with chocolate.
I'll give you another reason why.
Okay.
Once you move from the home shop type of thing to a bigger operation where you're shipping stuff out, mm-hmm. now it always has to taste the same.
Oh, right.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you make something that's good but different, you can't use it. Because just like in a restaurant, you always go back for your last favorite meal, right? That last, you may not get it necessarily, but that's the reason you go back to the restaurant. So you had a great meal, and you know, like my wife and I, we love this one place called Los Tres Amigos. It's a little restaurant, Mexican restaurant by us. And we get the carne asada. We've gotten the carne asada at this place for years. I mean, it always tastes the same. If it doesn't taste the same, it's going to be a problem. Mm-hmm. You know, I need it to taste. So it's the same with me. I mean, I've got these confections that I make that people really, really like, you know, like peppermint patties, let's say, or something, you know, and they're not cheap. They're like $12 for the little pack of six or whatever, right? And, you know, if I let it slide, I mean, it's somebody's $12 for something that's not quite right, not quite the same. Mm-hmm. So that's one reason I can't. The other thing is that for me, if it would be like creating a new product, and that's a big procedure to create a new product. If you can sell a one-off, that's great. I wind up giving a lot of stuff away for free. You see me do that on TikTok. On TikTok, I'll make something and I'll tell the people when I'm doing it, I'm like, oh, I can't sell this. So I'm just giving these all away. And I think some people don't believe me, but I'm like, yeah, really, I'm giving this away, because I really just made it for the video to show you how to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And it's good, it's fine, but it's not going to be a product. So, you know, so you can give away that stuff, but you can't sell it. That's the thing.
What made you start TikTok?
I didn't have a lot of success at TikTok at first, but I wanted to do live videos of me making stuff and having people comment while I was making something. Mm-hmm. And it's a very interesting quote unquote journey on TikTok. Okay. So I was doing what everyone else was doing on TikTok and it wasn't working. I was showing off how great of a chocolatier I am. I was making something fabulous, doing the little decoration, you know, getting that little video, showing me making this, showing me making that. And I stepped back and I thought about it and I thought, you know, forget that. I'm just going to teach you how to make something not perfect at home yourself. Ooh. And that was the moment, the big revelation for me is like, yes, that's what TikTok is. TikTok is not about me showing off how good I am. TikTok is about me teaching you how to do something at home, anything, like make a hot chocolate, like make a marshmallow, make a caramel sauce, make a chocolate sauce. I mean, I'm not ever going to run out of content. There's a million things everybody wants to try to make. Pudding. Can I just make a pudding at home? But I mean, from scratch, like not from the box. I mean, from real, like just, you know, chocolate and cream and cornstarch, you know?
Yeah.
And now that's really what this is about. It's about me just helping people connect with what they want to try to do at home and helping them, you know, make their own little memories, you know? And, you know, if they want to buy something from me, great. And some people do, and that's awesome. But if you just want to try to, you know, learn how to make something at home, and you do, and you get a little bit of success. Oh, and the best part of this is when they tag me in their kitchen trying to replicate what I made.
Oh yeah.
Oh, I love it.
Yes.
Oh, I love it. I love it. They're trying, like they did their best to make whatever it is that I made, and they kind of got, you know, through it. And then they're like, hey, what do you think of this? You know, and I can't wait to tell them how proud of them I am because I'm proud of them for even trying.
Yeah, that's
and,
so great.
You know, everyone's going to love it. You know, it doesn't matter if it's not perfect. Come on. It's just, you know, let's have some fun with this here. Right.
Yeah.
You know, it takes a very short period of time to get to 70% competency in something. You can get to 70% competency in, gosh, fast, very fast. To get from 70 to 90, right? Oh, a couple years now to pack that on to get to 90%. As you start to move up those last percentages, right? 91, I mean, it doubles. Like you could spend a lifetime and be at 94%. And some other person next to you, they're at 98%, 96%, right? Everyone thinks you're great, but those last percent, you can obsess over those last 10%. So to take someone at home who's never made caramel sauce and tell them to throw these three things in, turn on the burner, stir, and they get something, mm-hmm. You know, it's like, wow, now you're over the fear. You can do it again. You know, it's the best gift I can give someone, not necessarily sending them one piece of, you know, 94%. Of perfection, you know, let's how about you eat your 70% of your perfection, and that's good enough.
Go ahead, Trey. I'm sorry.
That just a comment. That's beautiful. What a great gift to give people. I was admittedly rewatching your video about how to make chocolate pudding at home. Because okay. I like yeah. from scratch,
uh-huh. mm-hmm.
and I had never thought to try and look up to make it from scratch. And I'm like, I've never done this before. And you said something in that video that made me like click in and go, wait, what? Because you said the words, this is easier than it seems. You can do this. And once I heard that, I was like, wait, what? And you had my attention from that point. It was great.
And hopefully you got a pudding.
I haven't yet made the pudding.
Okay.
But I'm now inspired to do so.
You can take those little chocolate squares I sent you And you can use those. They'll taste really good in the pudding. Especially the dark ones.
If you didn't eat them all.
In fact.
I will neither confirm nor deny.
In fact, it's probably time for a chocolate break, right?
Ooh, yeah. I need to go heat up my water.
All right, for those of you who are on the chat live, one of the things I did on TikTok is teach people how to make hot chocolate, and it's different than what you might expect, because what we've learned. So these guys are all getting their water started.
Yeah.
I'll do the same. No, that's fine. It's fine. I'll carry it. So the way that it works, it, you know, usually out there is we take cocoa powder, right? It's cocoa powder. Mm-hmm. That's had the cocoa butter squeezed out of it. It was actually, believe it or not, a waste product. When you take chocolate and you squeeze it under heat and pressure, the cocoa butter goes out, and that's really valuable. And you're left with kind of this powdery stuff. That's what cocoa powder is. They grind it, they make it a little bit darker, so it makes it more palatable. Mm. And then they sell that to you, and you you add sugar and milk and everything to try to turn it back into hot chocolate, because you're trying to put the fats back in that the chocolate company took away. And so that's really how all of us grew up, you know, having hot chocolate. It's a powder with some sugar in it, and, you know, definitely use milk, not water. You know, stir it up, maybe put some marshmallow on top, and you've got hot chocolate. Turns out that if you're really making great hot chocolate, mm-hmm. you don't do this at all. You use pure chocolate, you know, real good chocolate, and you use water, hot water. Seems counterintuitive, mm-hmm. but that's what you do. It's those two ingredients. So I too have my hot water. So you have a mug, okay, and you just take some real chocolate. They have these little squares, okay, because yeah, that's right. I sent these guys each a bag, so that, you know, it comes with, now what's cool about the bag is that it's got two different kinds of chocolates in it. It's got a milk chocolate and a dark chocolate. And so by staggering the amounts of the squares that you use, you can drift it to be more towards dark or more towards milk. I did not give you guys the spicy version because I wasn't sure if you were cool with that.
We're cool with it. Yeah.
So I'm using, okay, so that's cool. So I just put that in there, and I'm going to go ahead and pour the hot water like this.
How many did you do?
Not enough. I probably should do at least three or four, I would say.
Three or four? Okay.
Three or four.
So there will be some left to eat.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there'll be some left to eat.
Okay.
So what's happening now is this, the hot water is melting the chocolate. And you just kinda look at it, you know, and decide if it's dark enough.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
So there's mine. Okay. Okay. Doesn't look that great yet, right? So I'm gonna stir it up some more. Now I didn't have any dark chocolate squares when I was the shop, so I'm just doing 100% milk chocolate in mine.
Okay,
no problem though. And then you can always spice things up with a little cayenne pepper.
Oh yeah, okay.
That's always good. So we'll put a little of that in there. Ooh, oops. little heavy on the cayenne pepper.
That's hilarious.
Okay. Okay, so this is what we got. This is what we got so far, okay?
Yeah, looking better.
Yeah, so the chocolate's almost melted. Ooh. Now, what you guys, you can absolutely drink this because it's, you know, it's good.
My tea kettle's about to...
Oh my god, the cayenne.
Oh no.
Oh no!
Puts a little regular in there. Yeah. All right.
My tea kettle is about to go off. I will be right back.
Yeah, mine is just starting to get there. So I'm
all right. Then I'm pulling out the secret weapon here. So this is a frother.
Oh, I am not prepared. This is amazing. Okay.
It's a great gift that I got. And I'm going to, once the chocolate melts 100% in my cup here, okay, so there's nothing in there but chocolate and water.
You have a little helper there, I see.
Yeah, I don't know why he's not just... I don't know what his deal is.
He's waiting very patiently.
His name is Chico.
Hi, Chico.
We named our caramel and pecans after him.
Oh,
they're
that's
called
what
Chicos.
That is. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That's this little guy here.
Oh yeah.
That
okay.
I managed
yeah.
To not eat. It's
yeah.
So you sent this box, and it was so hard not to eat everything because I tried one thing, thinking, "Well, it's going to be hard to wait, so I'll just try one thing, and then I'll wait till the show." And I was so excited to get my box before Trey got his box, and it turned out that actually was that backfired because I had more time with the chocolate in the house. And so I found myself going, okay, I'm just going to have a little nibble of this then. And it was so hard to stay. I'm not even exaggerating to describe how difficult it was to not eat it all because it's so good. And okay, I think my water is about ready.
Yeah, and so, I'm going to pour this off the... So I'm going to show you guys. Look at what happened here. This is...
So you put it through the frother.
Yeah, look what you get.
Ooh.
And that on top there is not whipping cream, of course. That's crema, right? That's coming right... That's the cocoa butter. Look at that.
Oh.
See? I don't know how well you can see it there, but... And that's delish.
Okay, I'm going to get my water.
So anyone, you don't need to get my chocolate thing to do this. You can do this with any chocolate that you like. Just, I would recommend one, a good bar of milk chocolate, a good bar of dark chocolate, and just kind of mix it in any percentage you would like into a cup of water. Add a little cayenne pepper would be my recommendation. You know, make it hot. And then you'll love it.
So for those people who don't typically think to put cayenne pepper into chocolate, how would you describe what that does?
In the quantity that I used just now, it's causing a significant amount of throat pain, actually. So if you enjoy throat pain and you're thinking, gee, what could I eat in any combination that would cause me such distress? And also the watering eyes, maybe you'd like that. Maybe it's a scene or something you're trying to play and you're like, wow, I wish I could cry on the man. Here you go, man. Throw a little cayenne pepper in your hot chocolate and try to keep it straight on a podcast. Because you're a master chocolatier.
Okay.
Woo! But anyway, yes, cayenne. Cayenne is like salt. And it's like lemon. These are the tastes that you add that accentuate.
Yeah.
Cayenne is not obvious. It works really well with fruits. And so if you are ever making anything with fruit, anything, even a piece of toast with jam, if you're trying to make a pie, if you're trying to make whatever, something, blueberry compote on your pancake, whatever, just you try a little bit of cayenne. What happened to you, Trey?
Are you okay?
It was too hot?
Heaven.
Oh, okay.
In heaven.
Yeah, Josh said one of his secret ingredients in apple pie is cayenne.
Yeah, cayenne. And then also lemon. So lemon with fruit is excellent too. Lemon, you know, always brings it out. And then salt. Like some people would add salt to this hot chocolate, and that's not a mistake. You could add a little bit of salt to the hot chocolate and you know, to kind of temper it a little bit. So if we were to take half the water that you guys used, half, okay, and really got concentrated, you'd have a completely different drink. So you can have something that's literally one part chocolate, one part water. Mm-hmm. And you will find that in fine chocolate shops. They'll serve it to you in a little tiny cup.
Like a sipping chocolate.
Yeah, a sipping chocolate. But it's the same recipe. It's the same idea completely. You know, I think Americans like to drink more liquid, right? So we're more into having a cup of coffee than we are a shot of espresso in general, you know, as a society. Mm-hmm. So hot chocolate for us, more of a volume drink. But, you know, they're both good.
This is incredible.
Yeah, so.
Taste test, 10 out of 10. This good. Is whole. Yeah.
So what did you use? So Trey, what did you do? How many darks versus milks did you use in yours? Like half and half, or did you go one way or the other?
I am much more a fan of dark chocolate, so I lean more on the dark chocolate side.
Mm-hmm.
What I love is that you've got a little recipe on the back of this. So I wound up following that, and I used, for the instructions, 5 squares dark chocolate, 3 squares milk chocolate. And for me, this is perfect.
That's how we make it in our shop. Oh, that's exactly the ratio that you get if you come to our creamery. That's what it is. What about you, Emily? What did you do?
I did 50-50 because I mm-hmm. was kind of unsure, and I thought, you know,
yep.
Can't hurt anything to go just 50-50.
And like also, I said, I went 100% milk because that's all I happen to have handy.
I love that we both have black mugs with red interiors.
And I have a screaming Totoro face.
Very cute. Yay. Very cute.
Yeah, this is the best hot chocolate I've ever had.
Good.
This is wonderful. Thank you so much.
Steph, yeah, Seth, if you are listening to this upstairs, I will be saving you a little sip of this. You need to try this. This is
good
incredible.
Luck saving any of it. My goodness.
I eat a little bit of chocolate every day. I don't know about you guys, but I eat chocolate every day.
Mm-hmm. I was about to ask if you got sick of it or if you could continue. You don't get sick of it. That's awesome.
Nope. I think I would get sick of candy. I would get sick of candy if I worked in a candy shop. Mm-hmm. I think I would. I get a little sick of ice cream in the ice cream part of our shop. Mm. Like just to sit and plow a bunch of ice cream, I don't really do that. But chocolate, and my tastes have changed from the beginning till now also. And you just gradually, you go darker, darker, darker all the time. So now I can eat an 85% chocolate, you know, as opposed to like a 70 or a 60 or something like that. So,
oh, that is
you too.
Yes. 85 is pushing it just a little bit,
mm-hmm.
but, it is incredible.
Gotta have a good chocolate because sugar hides all sins. So in chocolates, the more sugar you add, the more awful the chocolate can be.
Oh.
And that's why, yep. And that's why when you have those chocolate Easter eggs at Easter time, it is absolutely positively the worst chocolate they could find that they put into those eggs. So yeah, it's the worst of the worst, but they hide it with all that sugar.
Right. Well, there's a lot of grainy Easter chocolate out there. You said the word grainy before, so I'm assuming I'm using the word correctly, but it's kind of mealy almost.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what causes that, but.
It's literally just too much sugar.
Oh, is it? It's
like. I could also, yeah. I mean, that's why a lot of, like one of the number one questions that people ask me about chocolate is chocolate chips. In fact, let's talk about that for just a sec.
Ooh,
okay. Because everyone wants to talk about, okay, so like, where do you get the chocolate to make any of the things that I make? Where do you buy that chocolate? And so many people reach for chocolate chips, and I got to tell you, it's the wrong thing. Chocolate chips are literally made to withstand super high heat for a chocolate chip cookie, for example, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the whole point of it is to have high sugar content, high cocoa mass content and low oil content. The cocoa butter is the part that they remove because it's super expensive and valuable for the cosmetics industry. So they remove that part, leave you with the cocoa solids, the dark stuff, the part of the chocolate that makes it dark, right? And then they jack the sugar up, and that's what a chocolate chip is. So then when you try to melt that, you find you can't melt that. It becomes like a paste, and you're desperate for like, okay, what am I going to do here? So you're like, okay, well, and then this is where the everyone's like the home remedies, like they're going to put Crisco oil in it, or they're going to put coconut oil in it, or they're trying to thin it somehow to make it more fluid.
Or a wax or something.
Or a wax. Yeah. Good point. Yeah. A golf wax. And, you know, and then I've mentioned before that, you know, people, you should try to go get yourself a chocolate bar. And some folks have said to me, yeah, but you know, chocolate chips are cheaper. And I'm like, well, yeah, in fairness, they are, but it's because you're buying sugar, and sugar is cheap. Mm-hmm. In fact, that's the dirty little secret about chocolates, is that when you've ever been to those chocolate shops that sell by the pound?
Sure.
$16 to $32 a pound, get whatever you want, scoop it in the bag, we'll weigh it at the end. Mm-hmm. They are literally incented to jack the sugar content up because sugar is cheap. You know, sugar is 50 cents a pound. Chocolate's $10 a pound, right? So if I can, that's why chocolatiers never charge, real chocolatiers never charge by the pound, number one. They just don't. And they charge by how hard it is to make or how expensive the ingredients are, but really honestly, how hard it is to make, that's really how what they charge for.
Sure.
That's really what you're paying for. And they are intentionally trying to reduce the sugar. In every one of my recipes, I am trying to remove the sugar. Why? Because if I remove more sugar, I get more taste. So to make it taste more like orange, more like apple, more like cherry, more like blueberry, more like whatever, I got to remove the excess sugar. And it's the exact opposite of what a candy shop does because they're incented opposite.
Yeah.
And so that's just, it's a good lesson. It's something that I think people should understand. Like what's the difference between a chocolatier, a chocolatier? What's the difference between that and a candy shop? And that's generally what it is.
So it must have taken you a while to find the balance that you wanted in something like crafting chocolate, where you find, okay, how much sugar do I want? So I can use this for hot chocolate, but I can also use it for other things.
Yes. And actually, on a broader scale, what is it that I want to make in my shop? I got good advice about that early on in my career. And that was, make what they want, not what you want. So make the types of products or the chocolates that your customers generally want. Now, that you do have to balance that with the fact that you can also get bad advice. So, you know, I found that some of the loudest customers in the earliest days were not necessarily right about what they were telling me. So part of it is, this is complicated, because part of it is you're supposed to listen to what they want. And yet there's times you're supposed to ignore them as well, because they don't necessarily know, you know, what is best. But in a big picture, I live in the Midwest, in Michigan, very sports town, very sports centric. It is a candy town in that sense. And I discovered that for me, the best thing was to make upscaled candy or upscaled chocolates, but things that were familiar because it's what they had. Examples. Okay. They like Snickers bars. So I made my own Snickers bar, but you know, it's homemade nougat. It's cashew, not peanut, caramel, this Belgian milk chocolate. And so it's a high-end bar, right? But it's modeled after a Snickers bar. So familiar things, caramels, marshmallows, things of that nature. You know, those are generally the things that I make, because that's kind of what my market dictates. You know, mm-hmm. if I were in New York, I might do something different.
Sure. But you made it your own still.
Yes. And there's plenty of inspiration. You know, you can just go to the grocery store and, you know, you're inspired. You know, those candies are on the shelf for a reason. They're there because people love them.
Right.
So if you can, right. So if you can take those and make them better, then, you know, then you've really got a wind. But some of my colleagues around the United States, they're not on that page. They're going to make rosemary and ouzu flavored truffles, and they're going to get chocolate from Tunisia, and they're going to tell you that you should try it because it's awesome. And you have to be of a certain mindset to give that combination of flavors a try. And it's just not where I live.
Not everybody is that open-minded or open-paletted. Yeah.
Right. 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 So I try to make what I think will be popular, and but I also try to make it to a standard that's significantly higher than what they can get in a store. That's been, for me, that's been the magic formula. And the crafting chocolate that you had is based on hot chocolate that we serve in our shop, and, you know, people love it. They have it with rum, they have it to, you know, straight. It's exactly the recipe that is on that card.
Are you okay, Trey?
No, I am not. I literally just want to pop this bag open and just chug this chocolate. And the fact that you said that you can have this with rum, how dare you, sir? How dare you?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm watching Trey's face go like all these directions. Like, what is going on over there?
One, I am like sweating.
And it's not even from cayenne pepper.
It's not from the cayenne pepper, yeah.
It is not. So my sincere apologies, but this is incredible. If I can take 15 seconds to talk about what my taste buds are experiencing. This is one of the creamiest, flavorful things of chocolate. I don't think I have ever gotten more like genuine chocolate taste in a hot chocolate beverage. This amount of chocolate with the water for me is perfect. I get a perfect blend of creaminess. I have no little bits of anything left in it, right. Like that I can see. It is perfectly melted. 10 out of 10, no notes. Thank you. I'll be in the corner sipping down the rest of this.
You don't need or want the milk, because the milk powder is in the milk chocolate. Mm. So that's scientifically, that's what's going on there. The other thing is because we only have one fat, right? We have cocoa butter as our fat. When we add milk to it, it's two different kinds of fats, and it creates a skin. So you ever had a hot chocolate before and there's a skin that forms on the top?
Yeah.
You don't want that. You don't want that. So the fact that you're using the reason that you use the water instead of the milk is because you're using the actual milk powder that's mixed into the milk chocolate. And it's just better. I'm glad you had a chance to experience it. Good.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Do you sell this by the case at all?
No.
Is that an option for us?
No.
Too bad. I want to ask a question about the blonde chocolate, though, because that's something I've never seen before. And I'm wondering what, is that the same? Is it a chocolate bean? Tell us about that one.
No, it's a technique, actually, and it's a caramelization technique, and it's a little hard to do at home, but it is possible to do at home. Okay. So what happens is you take white chocolate. Yep. You take white chocolate and you put it in a pot under really high heat, like, you know, like you put on your gas burner, right? So something that's, when I say high heat, I mean, what I mean is, you know, chocolate melts at like 90 degrees, 100 degrees, right? Easily 120, it's totally, totally melted. You know, we don't take chocolate to 200, 250 or whatever, right? But in this case, you do. So what happens is the chocolate starts to, the milk solids that are inside the white chocolate, because that's what white chocolate is, right? White chocolate is cocoa butter, sugar, and milk powder. Those are the three ingredients in white chocolate. Okay. When you put that under high heat, that milk starts to caramelize and changes color. And that's why it's called blonde or golden chocolate. Okay. Some people call it. And so that's what you're doing. Yeah. And it completely changes white chocolate from being something that a lot of people really don't care for that much to being something that's a bit of a game changer. And then if you add anything salty to that, wow, like pretzels, peanuts, you know, stuff like something like that. It really is it's a nice balance. I made a coffee truffle with that as one of the layers to like, almost like, well, it's called a cappuccino truffle. Caramel latte truffle. So it was caramel, it was coffee, ganache, caramel, and then this blonde chocolate ganache on the top. Three layers. Super good. So yeah, so you can make your own blonde chocolate or you can buy it, but it's not easy to buy.
It's so good. It's kind of like the idea of browned butter, but chocolate.
Yes, that's exactly right. Yes, that's right.
I'm sorry to date it all, so Josh can't try any later.
Yeah. If you're a TikToker, there is indeed a video where I showed how to make this at home, and you can do it. You just basically put white chocolate, and you can even use the melting chips instead of, you know, the high end stuff with cocoa butter. And you put it on the stove and you stir it and you kind of control burn it and you'll create this. And when you take it off the stove, magically after about a half hour or so, it starts to settle down again and become chocolate again. And then you can use it.
Awesome.
It's very expensive to buy.
Mm.
It's very expensive to buy for me. Like if I want to buy it, it's roughly twice as much as other chocolate. It can easily be in the $20 a pound range.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And they do what they do. Now they do it really right? Because in the factory, what they do is they have, when the milk powder comes in to be dumped in, to be mixed, they're running it under a heater as it goes through that conveyor belt. So it's caramelizing just the milk powder as it's going into the machine. Mm-hmm. And that's how they get it perfect, you know, versus you on a stove with a spoon, you know, doing your best. But,
right.
But that's what you ate is me doing it my best on a stove, and it was pretty good, I thought. And then I think I may have added a little salt to that too. That helps a lot.
It's possible. Yeah.
I
have nothing to compare it to, so I don't know. But yeah, it's good.
There is another chocolate out there called Ruby that is, some people consider, the fourth chocolate. So you have milk chocolate, white chocolate, dark chocolate, and Ruby. Ruby is a red or pink chocolate, naturally pink. Mm-hmm. It was there's dispute on this, but it was invented and patented by a company called Calibo in Belgium. And they're the ones who turned it into a product and sold it. I use that chocolate too. And it's got kind of a natural lemony taste to it, but it's pink. Mm-hmm. It's naturally pink.
Fascinating.
A friend at work actually brought some, he bought some from like some import shop and brought me just like a little square of it. It was really good.
What did it taste like to you?
Honestly, I don't remember, but I remember it being like putting it on my tongue and going, I know this is chocolate. My brain recognizes that this is chocolate, but there's something in the flavor palette that is just different than what I've had. Hmm. So I remember it being different, but I can't quite remember the exact flavor palette.
I think that's pretty fair, Trey, because to be honest, it doesn't have a super distinctive flavor. It tastes like white chocolate with lemon. But the thing that gets you is that it's pink. Mm-hmm. You look at it and you're like, this is pink. No chocolate is pink. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, it's more the color than the taste. So actually, when this was first released and all of us, you know, chocolatiers were fighting to get our first bags of it, you know, because it was all on allocation. It was all who you knew to get some. You know, then when we got it, we're like, oh, what the hell do we do with it? You know, it doesn't really rock my world in terms of taste. So you have to kind of accentuate or use the fact that it's pink as part of the design, and you probably have to pair it with fruit.
So what is an example of something you've done with it?
Strawberry, raspberry, cheesecake hearts. Ooh. So a layer of strawberry petit fruit. That's French for petit fruit. It's French. It's fruit paste or fruit.
Okay.
Fruit gel. So it's like you take raspberry or strawberry and you condense it. You evaporate the water and you make a concentrate, and that's like a fruit paste layer. And then underneath that, I made a strawberry cheesecake ganache with like a white chocolate. And then the outer shell of it was this ruby.
Okay.
Which is cool because it's pink. And then I added a little bit of red and a little bit of white color. So the thing is mostly pink because mm-hmm. the chocolate is pink.
Hmm.
So that to me is kind of a good way to use it.
That fruit, the fruit layer you were talking about, is that the same stuff that was in the marshmallow heart?
Yes.
Okay.
Ooh.
Yes. Yes. It's pate de fruit. Oh, you should take a bite of that.
Yes, you should, because it is.
You got a knife or something?
I promised my boyfriend that he could have this.
The whole thing?
The whole thing.
What the hell were you thinking when you made that deal?
Okay.
All right. You don't have to eat it. You can just have to cut it.
Get him down here.
get him down here. Come on. This thing was so hard to make. I don't think I ever want to make these again.
Have you looked at how much they are on the website? You need to try this.
I thought,
oh, it's a marshmallow or it's a marshmallow chocolate heart. No, you bite into it and it's not at all. It is a whole experience. Sorry, I'm yelling.
This is a good example though of honestly making something that, how do you say this? It's almost a lose-lose in that it's super hard to make, so I'm exhausted.
Yeah.
And it's so expensive that people don't want to buy it because it's just too expensive.
Okay.
How in the heck can this little thing cost $18? I'd like to charge $25.
Sure.
Right? Have you ever done anything like that? Have you ever made something like that that was just too hard? Yes. Mm-hmm. That's what I did. That's what I did here. I overshot. It's got a layer of lemon marshmallow. Do I just throw lemon in it? No. I've got to take lemon. I got to grate the lemon. I got to And so I got to make a special marshmallow layer that's lemon and put it down. Then I got to take this strawberry and make this called petit fruit. I really was joking, but it really is called that, pate de fruit. And it means that you take strawberry and sugar and you cook it up to a certain temperature and you add pectin so that it sets, and you pour it out onto a silpat and let it set. And then it becomes this really thin layer of concentrated fruit flavor. Really, really good. Kind of like a jam, but a jam plus. Right, Emily, would you say? Like, it's like, wow, yeah. That hits you, right?
Yeah.
And it was strawberry. I digress. It was strawberry. Why? Because I threw a fit this year and said, I'm not doing chocolate dipped strawberries. I'm not doing them because they taste like cardboard in Michigan in February. They just do. Everybody wants them. Everybody likes the way they look. Everyone says they're so great when they eat them. And I look at it and I'm like, oh, so bad. So I was going to do a strawberry something, but I didn't want to do a strawberry dipped strawberry. So that's the reason why that strawberry layer was in it. Then the top layer of that thing, Trey, when you finally get the courage, okay, when you finally get the courage, all right, the top layer of that thing is strawberry marshmallow. So imagine taking strawberry puree, which I did. I took strawberry puree, cooked the sugar syrup with the strawberry puree, poured it into the made the marshmallow from it. Oh, but that wasn't good enough. I had to also add freeze-dried strawberry to punch that up a little bit more. So you get these teeny tiny little speckles of like strawberry, you know, throughout the whole thing. Then it's dipped in a 61% dark chocolate with nonpareils for crunch.
Not just toggle slug.
What the hell is that?
Oh, toggle slug. Okay. Oh, I didn't expect to educate you today.
Oh, no.
This is exciting for me. So, basically, Hagelslag is sprinkles in the Netherlands. But they do, you know, they have a standard for their chocolate and stuff. So it's better than just American sprinkles that you'd get in the grocery store or whatever you're going to just find for your little cakes and cookies. This stuff actually has flavor. And this, yeah, so it actually is really delicious. And if you take like a piece of plain toast, if you toast it, put a little butter and sprinkle these on. In fact, that's how they eat it over there. Sprinkle it on the bread with the butter on there. It actually tastes like a donut.
Oh, wow.
But a really good one. And yeah, it's Hagelslag. And Trey went to the Netherlands. Oh, here.
Wow.
And
producer
then a box of Hagelslag
is ready.
Appeared in my hand. This is, thank you, Josh. This is a mix of chocolate and vanilla together. But
wow.
You
can, oh, okay.
Oh, my camera's switched here. But here, let me do this so you can see.
They look like what we would call jimmies, but they're probably not.
There. Now you can read it. It says Hagelslag right here.
Okay.
Right there.
Hagelslag.
Yeah, and it's just this box of sprinkles. And Trey brought this back for me from the Netherlands a few years ago. And I still have it because I don't use it that often. And but they are delicious. And yeah, I don't know why it comes up in conversation. I thought, what a great day to bring up Hagelslag.
Well,
I feel like you should slam your ass, Hagelslag. Or like right before you take a big drink, you know.
You have to have this look on your face when you're eating it, too. I don't know if you can see that.
Oh, yeah.
I can say, sitting in the Netherlands, I had a couple of people that, as part of the program that I was doing, that had heard of Hagelslag, and they're just like, yeah, what's the big deal? I'm like, you are literally in a country where you eat chocolate for breakfast and it's not frowned upon.
It's really good, too. It's not just, yeah. Yes.
But yes, can confirm everything that she's saying.
Like, why are you talking about Hagelslag? We eat that like every day. It's like someone coming over here and being like, Rice Krispies. We're like, yeah. Pizza.
Pizza bites for breakfast.
Bagel bites. Okay.
And okay, now's the time where we devolve into madness.
Well, it's time for the live studio audience questions about chocolate.
Yeah.
Last chance, everybody. We're winding down. So if you have a question, a burning question about chocolate that I can make up an answer to, please indulge me the opportunity to do that.
We'll have a little bit of a delay with our audience, but we'll make sure we get your questions in. While we're waiting for questions, I do have a question. For somebody that's wanting to get into chocolatiering or wanting to get into even trying this out for even as a hobby, what advice would you give them?
That's a Chico. Mm-hmm. If you're young, let's just say under 30, but 20s, I would recommend you go to pastry school, and I would recommend that you go through and like work at a hotel. You will work. I did not have this experience, but I know a lot of people who did, and they speak about it fondly because this was the period in their life where they were just literally beat to smithereens, right? They worked incredibly long hours. They got yelled at constantly for screwing stuff up, but they worked in a big kitchen that was producing a lot of stuff, and this is really where they cut their teeth. Pastry school, you know, being able to go for 2, 3, 4 years, I think 2 years most of the time, right, to a actual pastry school, I think would be fantastic. And then you learn everything, and you actually learn it in a structured way. You know, you'll learn all about pastry, and you'll learn all about the different ingredients and how they work together, and you'll get a decent, you know, bunch of food science as well, and you get a chance to practice and in a group environment, and that's a fantastic learning experience. And you probably go off somewhere to go to pastry school, and that's also an experience in and of itself. And like I said, then you go and you don't really mentor, you kind of go into the system, and usually the system is the hotel. It's the hotels that produce the product in bulk. The Four Seasons hotel type of thing, right? Where they've got 500 guests coming and somebody's got to knock something out for that. That I think is what I would do if I were younger. If I were younger and that's what I wanted to do. If you're older, if you're like me, someone who's already had a career, had some success, and now you're just having fun, quote unquote fun, and you have a little bit of disposable income and you kind of want to try to, you know, to do this, then I would recommend you go to more of an advanced chocolate school, which wind up being 1 week programs, 2, 3 day programs. There's some online as well. And that's how, and you're in a group setting and that's how you learn. And then as far as the timeline goes, usually you're in your home for at least a year or two trying to make something. And it's very hard. You know, you're YouTubing and you're failing all the time. So that's kind of how it starts. And then, you know, maybe then you go into a licensed kitchen somewhere. Like I was telling you about my favorite St. Catherine's Church with the gas stove and the pilot light. And, you know, so where you have to literally go in, clean up before you start, do everything as fast as you can, clean up and then leave. That's a really difficult work cadence. But that's, you know, that rite of passage that some people do until you finally can afford to buy your own shop or build one in your home or something like that. So that's generally the rule. It is not an easy way to make a living. It is definitely a lot of work. You have to love it. You have to love it. I love it. Hmm. I love it. First of all, I'm totally geeked on the intellectual challenge. Like the fact that it's complicated, I love it. The harder that it is, the more I love it. It's that it's hard. Second, I love the business challenge. Like this is not an easy thing to financially succeed at. So being a business guy, you know, I had all these companies in the past. My first computer company when I was 17, I never had a real job. I mean, I just nothing but company after company after company, right? And I did go to Michigan State, become an electrical engineer, but I can't engineer anything. I just basically ran companies. So I kind of know how it's supposed to work. And wow, chocolate business is not easy to succeed at financially. So it becomes a bit of an intellectual challenge. However, a lot of people in my position, they're not trying to necessarily feed their family, right? They're just, you know, if they could make $20,000, $30,000 a year extra, you know, that's fun and that's fine. And that is very achievable. Making $100,000 a little harder, making $200,000 extremely hard, because now you're like really running a chocolate company more so than you are being a chocolatier. So that's something that I talk about all the time. It's like, okay, do you really want to be the person in the kitchen that actually makes the stuff? And you kind of need to adjust, you know, your financial aspirations a little bit, because really the best use of your time, if you're a business person in the chocolate business, is not to make anything. It's just to be, you know, be the salesperson or whatever. Right. But if you love actually working with the product, then you need to kind of to be somewhat modest in terms of what you want your financial return to be in exchange for the fun of actually being in there and making the product. I forgot your question. How long have I been talking? What am I saying?
Where am I?
What? Do you want to know my life story again? Like what?
No, you answered
something really simple. Like, how do you start making chocolate, right?
It was, you... oh, go ahead, Trey. You know better than I do.
No,
roll
I...
that tape.
You definitely answered the question.
Oh, good.
I think...
20-minute monologue. I better have gotten through it somewhere.
I love in that answer that you're giving perspectives on multiple fronts, because I feel like we've got an audience where there's some people listening of, oh, I'm not young enough to do that. But again, you are saying, here, let's have some perspective. You can start at any point. Here are my recommendations for you wherever you are to get that done. And I think with this podcast, we are all about how to make that dream come true. So if you've got that, I love that you already spoke to that. To be a little bit more personal, Sandra in our chat asks, when do you think you're going to have the peanut butter Buckeyes back in stock?
When I switch to peanut butter, and that is going to be about 2 weeks.
Okay.
Because once I bring the peanuts are already in the shop, but once I open the peanuts, I can do nothing but peanuts because it's an allergen, right? So as soon as I go into peanut butter Buckeye production, I'm going to go really hard. I want to make lots of them, and then I got to clean everything up and put it away. So I have a couple of other things I want to make in between because my poor vegans are out of their vegan assortments. And so I'm trying to get the vegan stuff done over the next, like I said, 2 weeks or so. Maybe that's a week and a half, something like that. Then I'm going to go all in on peanut butter Buckeyes. All you got to do is watch TikTok because I'll probably do some stupid peanut butter Buckeye thing on TikTok. You'll know I'm getting close. Right now, you just saw me do a vegan orange meltaway. So you can tell. See, now you know the backstory. Now you know I'm trying to get through the vegan stuff. All right. So I'll probably do a couple more vegan stuff and then I'll switch and I'll be all about the Buckeyes again.
And then Kaz asked if there's something out there for people who are allergic to chocolate.
Yes, there is. I don't know how good it is. I did buy some. I did do a video on it. It's called Carob.
Oh, yeah.
There's a Carob tree. There's a Carob tree. And you can buy Carob powder. You can also buy Carob chips. Carob doesn't have cocoa butter in it, so they add their own fats to it. So you don't have to temper it, but you could just melt it and work with it. It does have a good flavor, a decent flavor. It has a terrible smell, though. I don't like the smell. I don't mean off. I don't mean like skunk. I don't mean that bad. But I mean like, you know, when you take chocolate and you first smell it, you get part of your enjoyment just from the smell of it. I don't really get that from the carob, but if you eat it, it's okay. The other thing I would say too, if you're allergic to chocolate, be super careful to find out is it the cocoa butter? Is it the cocoa solids? Is it both? Because if you are allergic to cocoa butter, then you might be able to use a compound chocolate. If you are allergic to cocoa mass, you might be able to have white chocolate and therefore then have blonde chocolate and actually have ruby chocolate. So make sure you really pinpoint what that allergy is so that you're not completely, you know, cast away.
So Kaz is saying that it is the cocoa bean, but you're saying within the bean are these elements that it could be one or the other or both.
Could even be the soy. Like almost all chocolate that's made, if you look closely in the back label, it has a teeny tiny percentage of something called soy lecithin.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And some people are allergic to that. Oh. So you can buy soy-free chocolates. And in fact, the chocolate I have running through the machine that I have running through the machine is soy-free. So it's made with sunflower lecithin instead of soy lecithin. So, but
yeah. She said she's going to figure this out. And I hope you do so that you can try this chocolate, hopefully. And or at least
this person can reach out. You can reach out to me and send me whatever email or whatever, and I will send you some carob if you want to try it, and send you some, maybe a couple of pieces of white chocolate. And you just report, you know, whether or not you did or did not go to the hospital, and just mark it down on a sheet. I tried this EpiPen, you know, I tried it, you know, whatever. All right. And we will decode it, and hopefully we won't lose a listener because we need those listeners. So
Kaz, I'll get slow. I'll get you that information. That's great. Please don't get to the point where don't kill our Kaz, Josh.
I don't want to kill a Kaz.
Kaz, we love you, and we hope you please stay safe.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Don't. No dying.
No, never. Please.
Stay immortal.
Okay. Last question for me. But Constantine, one of the big things that we want to make sure that we do, and especially with how active you are in keeping us engaged and your followers engaged, where can our listening audience find you on social media?
So I've mentioned TikTok a lot. TikTok is where TikTok at Constantine Zigo. You just, if you can somehow suffer through the word Constantine Zigo, Google will help you find, you know, because there's not very many of us with that name combination. But TikTok is where I tend to try to show people how to do stuff for themselves at home. Occasionally I show off and show something that I'm doing, but it's usually in a kind of a teaching mode. I've got a YouTube channel where I would tend to go a little deeper and like maybe show you how a guitar cutter would work, or how to run an aerobing machine, or you know, some, or maybe like more of the layers of like more behind the scenes of actually making stuff. So that's at Constantine Zigo too. I have an Instagram as well. I'm not as I tend to talk to other chocolatiers more on Instagram. Mm-hmm. So that's more me riffing with them. And so that's really where I'm at. It's on TikTok and YouTube.
Okay. Perfect. Please go and follow him. Emily, any last questions before we close out the show?
I don't have any questions, but I want to say a huge thank you for being here and for sending us chocolate and for chatting with us, because this has been so fun. And
good.
I've had a great time, and I want to have you back on the show sometime. And so no pressure, but like, we really do. It'd be great.
Well, I would love it. And truly, if anyone is inspired to try to do what I do, I mean, it's within your grasp. It really is. It's within your grasp. You can be a chocolatier. You can mentor at a shop somewhere. You know, just there are a lot of great stories about famous people that just knocked on pastry chef's doors and asked if they could, you know, work there for a little while. And you'll get a feel for what it's really like. You might just love it. It might change your life. It did mine. The little chocolate business with my son, William, it really was, you know, a fantastic turning point. And I loved everything else I've ever done too. So it's not like, oh, I found my real passion. You know, no, I have a lot of passions. I've one of those most people that has always loved whatever it is that I've done. I'm lucky like that. I've always had fun doing stuff. And the chocolate business is cool. A ton of work and a little bit exasperating, a lot of science, etc. You don't necessarily get rich doing it, but it is really fun. And you know what else? You know the big benefit? When you go to a party and you try to tell people what you do, they actually get it really quick. You say, what do you do? Well, you know, I decode astrophysics, you know, linguistics projects. What? You know, or me, am I, you know, digital advertising? You know, I work with algorithms to enhance the experience of, you know, of digital. What do you do? Oh, I make chocolate. Really? Like, You know what I mean? So it's like, it solves the party problem, really. So if you want to be a chocolatier, I'm telling you, that's one of the big benefits right there.
That's incredible. Seriously, Constantine, thank you so much for being on with us tonight. I can't wait to chat with you again. And honestly, yeah, please go buy his chocolate. Yeah. It's so good. As we close out this episode here, this episode, along with probably every episode forever and ever, is going to be dedicated to Joe Capone, our moderator, fellow comedian, and passionate encourager, and greatly missed friend. You can find us pretty much wherever you tune into podcasts. For updates, announcements, and more, please follow us on social media under The Modern Romantic. Thanks, everybody, and j'adore chocolat.
Bye-bye, everybody. Bye.